Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast and Week 2 of Deliberate Practice with our co-host, Andy Ryland, our Senior Manager of Education and Training. Andy, always great to be talking ball with you.
No doubt, Keith. Love being a part of this weekly program, and especially this time of year when you get to go out and see some games locally here, but then also the social media and the friends, you know, you see the games and the clips across Twitter. So there's a lot of exciting stuff happen, but after week one or week two, still early in the season, we're always looking for some answers. There's little gaps we're trying to plug, and there's unique learning opportunities.
You know, Andy, I think the unique opportunity a lot of times that presents itself in week one or two or early in the season is the ability to train away penalties. This is a time of year, a lot of new things happening, new guys out on the field, situations they haven't been in, and certainly those can cause maybe more than normal penalties and certainly more than we want to see as coaches, and essentially that's what we see at this time of the year.
Yeah, the emotion, the intensity, the enthusiasm, sometimes it gets the better of our players. And you know, we've all seen games, whether it was our game or even watching on TV, they can be a little sloppier, I think, than most coaches would want.
And so we're going to talk today about how do you train away those penalties. So clearly, get them on the line, run some gassers, run some sprints, and they should stop doing it. All right, well, thanks for joining us on today's show. Let's hold on a second. Maybe it's not that easy, and maybe there's some better things we can do. I know traditionally that's been it. If there's been those errors in a game, we traditionally get them on the line on Monday when they're back at it and try to run those out of them. But again, you look at cause and effect and really what's going to help in those situations, and I think it's a couple things. It's a better understanding of why those things occurred. And then it's putting those players in those situations and teaching them basically how to feel their way out of it, right? We talked with Vinny DiGaetano the other day, and Vince talked about teaching your players to feel their fundamentals. And a lot of it, when you look at the physical errors that come in to play when you have these penalties, it's not quite having that feel yet for how do I adjust to win this play? How do I adjust to get out of a bad situation? So that's going to be the focus, and we're going to look at some common situations that happens. But Andy, what do you think about that idea as far as training away the penalties, that it's not necessarily going to be the physical punishment that does it, that it's really better coaching?
Yeah, I think 100%. It relies on us as coaches sorting out and trying to solve problems with our athletes. And you know, a couple things about these old school kind of punishment or we're going to do this for penalties. You know, coaches always say, right, hey, if we make an aggressive mistake, I'm okay with that. But we're kind of talking out of both sides of our mouth. If we're making the repercussions for making an aggressive mistake, some sort of physical punishment that gets imposed on the whole team, because naturally then we're trying to shy away from those situations. So, hey, play aggressive, downhill 100%, full effort mistakes are okay, but you're going to get punished for it. And so not that we don't understand that there are consequences, but are we making sure that the outcome of those is specific and we're making sure we're not sending mixed messages? The other thing I've always worried about across all things in coaching is, you know, do you want to set a standard that you can't necessarily keep? So what were to happen if you were to get, you know, 20 penalties or something outrageous? Well, clearly the preparation for the next game opponent becomes impacted if you're going to run that kind of volume, because you probably haven't planned for it. It's probably way more yardage and sprints than, you know, your normal kind of run the soreness out session would be. So can you even implement it and still make sure that you're prepared to perform at the highest level? Well, if the answer is no, then there has to be some arbitrary cutoff of, hey, this is running too much and it's unneeded to get the guys ready to go. So, hey, we're going to run for penalties, but we're going to have the cutoff be at X number because we don't want to impact your performance next week. You just start getting this funny atmosphere. So it's not a standard that you can hold throughout the season. And, you know, I think most of us agree that we're trying to catch kids and reinforce positive behaviors. And so the negative consequence ways of coaching or teaching may be from days gone past. And we think that there's better ways to accomplish the actual goal, which is simply to allow the players to handle the situation better and accomplish the end task without breaking the rules.
And let's start with some easy one here, Andy, and those pre-snap penalties. And a lot of times we say, well, it's just a lack of mental focus. Our players aren't disciplined enough. That definitely should be handled with the running. But you make a very good point, is how does that affect our training load? What is it going to do to us physically in preparation for the next game? So how can we, you know, handle those kinds of things? And I think back to a drill we would do when I was at BW, and I want to say we did it once a week, and I want to say it was usually like a Wednesday. And so it wasn't heavy conditioning. The sprints we were doing were actually 10 yards, and the guys would get on a line, and it was with both sides of the ball, offense and defense. And our head coach, John Snell, our head coach at BW, would give them a command that they were going to go on and really, you know, stress on them that we need to do this in 10. And if they had an error, we went back to zero. So sometimes that 10 turned into 20 or something like that. But the focus really then became keying in on, all right, I need to listen for an exact cadence, an exact word. He might say, go on the second whistle and blow the whistle on the very first sound, and then go through a cadence and do a whole bunch of stuff and try to get guys to jump and then blow that second whistle. And so he would always vary it up. But what it became was really being in tune, focused, and listening for exactly what needs to happen for us to move. And he would vary it because there are those positions, like your receivers, for example, that are supposed to be looking and going on ball movement, or your defense that's always going on ball movement. So we would do some things within there well, that as well as he would put some movement in there too. The idea, it did put us in those stressful situations because nobody wanted to be out there longer than they had to. So that was the focus there. And I liked that because it wasn't heavy running. Now, I think the other thing, though, is we have to address that within the practice. And you and I talked about preparing our players for situations and that idea of sudden change. And we even mentioned some of this, being prepared to go on two if you're on offense, or not jump if you're on a short yarded situation or whatever it might be. So we have to build those into practice as well.
No, 100%. And I think, you know, if as a defensive player, you're thinking the offense is using a hard count for a reason. They're trying to draw us offside. They're going to put voice inflection. They're going to do everything they can. So are we replicating those stresses and those challenges in practice? And I think that a lot of coaches, you know, we don't want to, quote, waste a rep. So the idea of letting your scout team offense go on to, or, you know, you think your young sophomore scout team defensive tackle is going to jump off sides because he's young and inexperienced. So if the offense goes on to, the scout team jumps off sides and everything gets messed up. So we don't get as many reps, and we're just going to get in this pretty comfortable pattern of going on one, and all of a sudden you realize you haven't really stressed the guys both offensively and defensively to be prepared for going on two. So situationally, let's say you're playing a team and they have a really great edge pass rusher, and he does a great job of timing the snap and jumping the ball, and he's quick and he's fast, and you're thinking, hey, we're gonna, you know, we got to use some hard counts this week, we got to go on two this week. Well, you know, maybe it's something as simple as saying, hey, we're going to do a hard count period. And that means we're going to tell our scout team, hey, fellas, 5 minutes hard count period. I need you really dialed in. Just that little bit of refocus from them that we're going to do a hard count period. We're going to try to draw you offsides. I need you guys to do a great job of doing it the right way, of not getting pulled offsides, so that your offense can go through those high quality reps. So I think it is very reasonable for us to, you know, we talked last week about putting our guys in stressful situations, but you can kind of cheat the coaching with the scout team in order to get the high quality training you want from the guys that are going to be your game day contributors. So let the scout team know, hey, this is hard count period. make sure you guys clue in. Hey, I want you to do these particular things. Maybe you want them to jump off sides because you're working with your center's quick snap on trying to, you know, trying to capture the penalty or whatever it is. But recreate those situations. And then I love what you said. You know, we have to try to find ways to manufacture stress and emotion. And I know playing music is very common in practice, but it's kind of that internal passion, that emotion that comes out of game day that we have a really hard time recreating in practice. So are there ways we can create challenges, games, or up the stress level to make sure that the guys are working on their focus abilities? Because for me, it's great to say, hey, we were really focused in the classroom going through our video. But it's a much different focus when you're in front of hostile fans and they're booing and the band is playing and it's really loud. Can you keep your focus then?
Yeah, Andy, absolutely. We have to look to manufacture those kinds of things in practice and work those opportunities. Because if we don't, it's partially on us when our players make those errors in the game. I like to think of it too. What kind of systems of communication can you set up to avoid those kinds of things when you're going on to, for example, on the offense? I know, man, a long time ago, I remember my offensive line making a funny call pre-snap, and this was when I was coaching high school ball, and I want to say the word they were using was chucklehead. I'm like, what is chucklehead? What call is that? I said, it's a reminder when we're going on a long count for none of those guys to jump. So when they get up to the ball, someone would always be responsible for that and call out chucklehead, and then they wouldn't jump off sides. The other system we had, I know a couple places, was with the quarterback. So the quarterback would kind of take it into his hands and go up to the line of scrimmage. And I'm thinking at this particular time, we'd go on set on 1, 2, 3, or 4. And so he used days of the week as the code word. So if we were going on set, usually he wouldn't say anything, but he could communicate that. If someone didn't know, they would yell, check, check. And he'd tell them, you know, check Sunday or check Monday. And I think they did it Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. And, you know, we skipped the Wednesday. So it was Monday was on 1, Tuesday was 2, Thursday was 3, Friday was 4. And that was their system of making sure, okay, you know, we had a call in the huddle. We got to the line of scrimmage. We're set. We looked at the D. I'm going to remind these guys one more time what we're going on so we don't jump offside. So there's communication things you can do to help that. Same thing on defense. I mean, the last thing you want your guys saying is the negative thing. So you don't want them saying don't jump. So is it watch the ball? Who's responsible for that, you know, in those long yardage situations and understanding it? And again, training it in like that last second focus before things happen, that someone puts that back into everybody's mind because that's critical to the play. So I think there's little systems of communication. And again, you have to work those in practice. Make sure that those are happening all the time. The other pre-snap error that happens is the illegal shifts or motions. And, you know, thinking back to my son's game this past Friday, we had two where our receivers were heading up towards the line too quickly. And one was going away from the ball. The other was coming in towards the ball. And you would think that's pretty simple, but do you work it enough, right? If you are not a team that motions all the time, maybe if you are a team, it's even of more value, you know, have a 5-minute motion period where you go through, you know, and time up all your motions, whether that's your jets, your shifts, and then a motion. And the idea that in some of those plays, a guy has to come set before the second guy moves, a guy has to key a certain thing. So for example, if, you know, easy way is to always square up and then you're not heading forward too quickly. And you usually can be in a situation where, you know, if you were the guy usually running away, that you can hear the quarterback again and you can look in on the ball. But let's say you do want to go in motion away and stay on the run. Well, teach your guy to key that outside receiver, right? That's really your key for that to happen. So you just remind them of those things as you go through a motion period. And so what I would do is just set all those up, have a real quick script. You can go against air, and you're not running the full play. You're basically snapping the ball, running a couple steps, line up the next play. And it gives you the opportunity to work all those things, especially early in the season, and make sure that you're not having any procedural errors because guys weren't set, because guys were heading towards the line of scrimmage too soon. So an easy thing to do, a 5-minute period, not very physical, but a nice mental period where you can work those kinds of things as well.
Well, I absolutely love that idea, especially for the wide receivers. I think it's a fair question that we probably get. There is probably plenty of those penalties this weekend. And then you can ask yourself, hey, what did we tell our wide receivers? So I'm motioning towards the line of scrimmage. Well, let's say we're playing in a hostile environment or you know, we're playing away on the road. Okay, hey, when you're motioning in towards the line of scrimmage, I need you to watch the ball the same way our offensive tackles do. If we haven't communicated that, you know, it's hard for me to think we can hold the player accountable. That's dependent on our teaching, and sometimes we assume some of the basics are there, and we always need to teach from the ground up. I loved your point about the guy motioning away who's keeping his back to the ball, because it's very common, right? We're going to run that quick motion, and then we're going to transition into a speed out. We want to keep that speed going. Well, have you ever given him a cue? Hey, this is what I want you to key for the release. And if you haven't done that as a coach, then again, that penalty's on us. Let's take a step back. Let's tell our guys on motions, we're going to do X, we're going to do Y, we're going to do Z. Here's your keys, here's your cues. And so that it's make sure everyone knows the rules. It's not just, hey, we're going to motion and then we're going to go, because you can't always count on hearing the quarterback.
So, Andy, this next group of penalties starts to get more into the physical part. And let's start with holding on the line of scrimmage, and that could be for both for offense and defense. For offensive guys, we understand how that's going to happen. Defensive guys, a lot of what you're seeing now with some of the different schemes is some of those linemen at times are responsible for quote-unquote blocking a defender to open up a gap. And a lot of times, instead of keeping their body in a position to shield him off to get to, let's say, that linebacker or the other lineman stunting, they grab him and hold him, which is illegal, right? So what do you do? How do you train your player to have that feel for when this becomes, on either side, goes from being a block and turns into holding? And, you know, going back to early on, Coach DiGaetano saying the other day, you know, to feel your fundamentals. Most of our guys at this point in the year are in those holding situations because they just don't have that feel for it yet. They don't know when, you know, my arm is starting to come outside the frame of my body and having that feel. So train it into them, right? Put them in that bad situation and teach them the counter to get back in a good situation. So it could be as simple as understanding how to refit the hand, how to move the feet to a position that gets you out of the hold, right? But you can't do that if it's not trained. And it's very difficult to go full progression from, let's say, stance, start, all the way into things, and then start to lose a block. So start in a situation where you're losing the block, where it's going to be, in the next step, a penalty if we don't correct something quickly. And so you could go into multiple refit drills depending on what type of block you're using or what kind of situation it is. We have a great refit drill in our contact system available at footballdevelopment.com. So that's one to check out. If you haven't been over there, you can get that video free, three free videos by just signing up. But again, it's that feel, both offensively. It doesn't happen necessarily as much on the defensive side of the ball on the line of scrimmage, but there are those teams who use the scheme to do it. And it's all about, again, feeling those fundamentals. Have you taught them to feel it? And then have you taught them the counters they need to employ when they end up in that situation? Because everything is not going to work out perfectly. Even for your most talented players, there's going to be a time where he's in the wrong position. He has made an error. His opponent has done something really to put himself in an advantageous position. So how do you counter that? And again, put him in that situation to start. Put him in the fit where they're losing it, and teach them to move their hands, move their feet, or both to get back into the situation where you're not going to have that penalty and essentially to win that block or that situation on the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it is a huge kinesthetic, you know, fancy word, right, about the feeling of things. So coaches have always said, you know, stay tight, stay inside. Hey, it's okay if you hold, if you're keeping them tight and you got the steering wheel and all the things that coaches say. But do we understand the distances that starts to look bad on film or look like a penalty to the official? So we can say some big words like keep it tight. What does that mean to the player? Have we ever addressed that? How do they feel that in their body? That's a huge thing. And then to your point, the recapturing poor situations is another thing that I think coaches should train probably more often than they do, because a lot of those holding penalties aren't for lack of effort. It's trying to recapture something. It's, hey, we're getting pulled away from, and then we feel like we need to do something to make a successful play. So it was introduced to me under the term bad body drills, and it's really more bad position drills. But, you know, things where we'll take a pass set, for instance, but we're going to put both of our offensive linemen's hands on the inside edge of the shoulder pad. So this could be a guard with a three technique rushing, a center with a nose, or, you know, any one of our tackles facing an end. So he has both of his hands on the inside shoulder as if the defender is about to turn the corner. And so we'll start the drill in that position, and then he's going to have to kick and work his feet, and he's going to have to refit his hands to try to battle back and not, you know, open up that turnstile, but fight and stay square and refit and work those feet. And we can, I love to your point, it's hard to recreate those sometimes in our team periods. So you need to manufacture these sometimes within our individual period, where we're going to be in a bad position and we're going to have to work our feet and work our hands to get back out of it. Well, we like to do a lot of work, or I used to do a lot of work, where we would start guys pre-engaged, because obviously we want to make sure safety is king, but they'd be in a bad posture. So maybe we wouldn't let them bend their knees, and they'd be, you know, hinged at the hips, or, you know, they'd be at an angle that they didn't like. Maybe their feet would start narrow, and then they'd have to work to refine a good posture throughout the course of the drill so they could try to win. But what we're trying to do is recapture bad positions, because I think that is what happens a lot of times on these, all these penalties. Maybe we get a bad initial step, we get a bad read. Now all of a sudden our engagement isn't kind of that perfect thing we'd trained, and I go, uh-oh, what am I going to do here? So we have to make sure guys have the understanding of their body, and then the tools, both refit and footwork, and as we call it, reshaping, to refine good postures within those situations. Because I believe if players feel like they can get out of it, then they're not going to hold, they're not going to grab and do all those things. And then defensively, you're spot on. And I think it's just something we have to do a better job of paying closer attention to. Over the past 2 or 3 years, defensive holding has become increasingly more common. It used to be a penalty that you rarely saw, even though it was in the rule books. And I think now it has been a point of emphasis, and you are seeing it more on stunts and even holding up double teams on our combos, so that our coaches just need to make sure that we're talking about those things and that our players understand it, because it's definitely a more common call in recent years.
Andy, the next group of penalties are the pass interference, so either defensive or offensive pass interference. And I'm going to talk about one situation here. I think as you maybe see some different things that come up, you might want to create those situations that you can work on this a little bit. But a lot of where you see the defensive pass interference or even offensive pass interference is on those 50-50 balls, right? Those vertical routes thrown, you know, deep, and the players are going up to make a play on the ball, and they don't understand their body position in space and end up either running into the defender or offensive guy. Either way, and having that pass interference penalty. So again, very tough to think about how do you set that up, and, you know, to run go routes and try to have those 50-50 balls all the time. I mean, you're going to do some things like in pat and go and early in practice, but to specifically be working those situations where we're fighting for body position without all that running down the field. And I go back to a drill that Ron Lewis from Baldwin Wallace, a good friend of mine, talked about doing with his receivers, where he wanted his guys working that trajectory on a ball a little bit more of come, you know, that ball that goes up and then comes down, that deeper ball, but didn't want them running all the way. So he'd just take them over to the bleachers. They'd stand on the track and he would just throw the ball coming down at them. So they would, you know, simulate moving their arms, look over their shoulder and track it in. I think you can use that kind of a setup here really to create that situation where you have that 50-50 ball and maybe only have those guys running for a distance of 5 to 10 yards before they're going up to make the play on the ball. You're getting more reps in because it's a quicker drill, but you're starting to get that feel for going up for the football. Now, again, so guys don't get tangled, you might want to designate a winner in that. So, hey, this is, you know, a defensive drill, or maybe it's just your defensive guys, you know, working against each other, or offensive guys working against each other to go up and get body in position to go get the ball in that situation and avoid a penalty. But that would be an idea for, you know, how you create a drill like that to avoid the pass interference.
No, I love that idea. And I think for, you know, depending on your stadium or your practice field, you could recreate something like that where, you know, it may be a ladder that you would use for filming. I don't exactly know what they're called, but when the marching band comes out at halftime, the conductor stands up kind of in that chair thing. Well, if that's at your field or your facility, you know, can you stand up on top of that and use that to drop the balls in to your receivers and your secondaries? Because I think that's a one of those situations that, again, is hard to recreate in practice. We're worried about the total load. We don't want them running. You know, how many deep balls do we truly throw in a practice? So for us to get some maybe concentrated work on that situation, you're going to have to recreate it. And I think the concentrated work on both offensive and defensive pass interference is huge, because I think we agree. You see a lot of those where players just seem to panic in the moment, especially when it's contested. They're covered and they're right there and both players are going up for it. And, you know, they've seen on TV and they've heard the announcers talking about this player being like a great basketball guy and bodying him up and boxing him out. But they don't really know how to do that yet, unless we create some of those situations where they can do it. So anything that's high enough that allows you to, like you said, run 5 yards, drop a ball in from good height, and then have them work on the jump, or, you know, the offensive guy not pushing off, the defensive player, as he closes the space, making sure that he can gather himself to jump for the ball instead of continuing to run through the wide receiver. How many times do we see that on a ball that's slightly underthrown? And those situations, again, because they are so difficult to recreate, we have to be really pretty creative. But my wife is a volleyball coach, and so she spends a lot of her practice time up on top of one of those big things so she can hit balls down to the girls without having to, you know, jump 10,000 times to practice and try to actually attack a ball every time they want to do dig drills. Well, shoot, we could bring some of those things out to our field and recreate some angles for our guys, hopefully pretty easily. And I think I saw a video of Terry Summerfield up on one of those things, and he had one of his tackle bags that was hanging from a band so that players had a moving target that they could work on hitting crossers in the appropriate strike zone. And they were changing the level, you know, by raising and lowering the bag as players climbed in on it. So those things are out there on fields. And if we just have a little foresight, we could probably create some really awesome competitive high ball drills. And to your point, you know, whether we want to keep our guys healthy and we're going to have a predetermined winner, so it becomes more of a distraction body control drill, or whether we're actually going to let them compete, is going to be based on your philosophy and probably where you are in the season. But, you know, you don't want the first time a player is really in a competitive battle for the ball and a pass interference can keep a drive alive to be on game day. So have they gotten reps of that over the preseason? It's pretty hard to track. So let's make sure we get some targeted training.
And certainly there's ways to create those, and maybe it's more of the comebacks, and you can work, you know, a defender having to come back to the football, a guy avoiding that push off and understanding those. And again, just being creative. What are the situations we need to work on where we've had those occur? The next couple really are kind of the targeting or illegal blocks that really are being enforced right now, and ways to, again, avoid those situations. I think we've become smart enough in this game that those hits, while they bring a lot of oohs and ahs from the crowd for our players, aren't good. And really, for us to be successful on offense or defense, are not necessary. So how do we avoid them, though? How do we make sure our players stay out of that situation and they're not drawing flags for something that is deemed illegal or unnecessary roughness? So again, thinking about, where do a lot of those targeting plays occur? Well, get somebody coming across the middle and simulating that. Again, it doesn't have to be a long throw. You could put a guy 5 yards in front of it, have your guy track from his position where he'd usually come from there, and aiming for a specific point on the body that keeps it legal, keeping the head out of it, et cetera. Again, it doesn't have to be a heavy contact period. Maybe even have a guy run with a shield and you're aiming for a specific point on that shield. I know we get so many good things from Coach Digitano over at Fordham. Like, he has his shields in sections where he has numbers on those and they're divided up, a 1, 2, and a 3, and focusing on those certain levels where you're going to want your player to make that contact and essentially be safe. And, you know, thinking of the opposite side, the illegal blindside blocks, I've seen more and more of guys who, instead of, you know, hammering that guy when he turns around, get in a position where they get in front of him and essentially box him out. They look like they're flying an airplane, right? Or they look like a basketball player going for a rebound. And again, training your guys to do that, because how many times in practice is the whistle blown as that guy gets out into space and our receivers actually don't have a ton of opportunity to work it? So maybe you work it in a period or let that whistle go a little bit longer, that guys have that opportunity to avoid the situation where they're making an illegal block or are avoiding a targeting penalty.
I think it's a great idea, that kind of that fold back block. Make sure you're hitting that on indies for your wide receivers. And then obviously you see it on special teams, and special teams demands the most space, and it's probably the highest speed play in football, just because guys get these big long run-ups. So for me, I think about the angles and the speed and spacing that's needed to do one of those box out blocks, or those airplane blocks, as you called it. You know, we're seeing that more and more, but how are we training it? And for me, one of the things that I always ask is, you know, are we training it at a representative enough intensity that it's going to carry over to the game day? So if, you know, we're doing our 70% jog and we're going down and then we're going to cut across and set up our wall, you know, the players really aren't getting practice at setting the right angle on game day. So, hey, our scout team is going to go down at 75% speed and then they're going to turn and we're going to run this wall return and everybody airplane blocks and it looks great. But all of a sudden there's a, you know, an all-state secondary player on special teams, and, you know, maybe the other team's got a kid who's an all-state track guy. He's not the best football player, but they put him on special teams and they let him run down there. Now the angles have changed drastically, and those guys have never practiced that decision-making or that angle-taking at a speed that's representative of game day. And I think that's where you get a lot of those blocks in the back, because guys take the wrong angle or they can't get in front with their arms to do the airplane block. And then it just looks really awkward when they kind of go back to back and end up, you know, kind of diving into a guy and knocking him down clearly from behind, but because they use their rear end, you know, maybe they think it's going to be legal. So we have to stress the speed of those special team plays. We have to stress the space and the angles of your special team plays. Now, we don't want to run crazy. Again, we want to make sure it's good targeted work. But when we go to that period, let's make sure we tell the guys, hey, we have to be prepared for what we're going to face. So whether it's 3 or 4 reps, or, you know, every special teams coach in the country is fighting for time within the script, we got to make them count, which means we need to be at speed, at pace, at angles. And you can do that without collision. You know, we talk about going full speed until contact is imminent, until we kind of see each other, we kind of lock eyes and we understand that we're there. But I think a lack of training at that game pace really hurts guys taking angles, which results in a lot of blocks in the back or illegal blocks in the special teams phase especially.
And it's amazing what you can work in a 5-minute period, Andy. That brought me back, as you were talking, to thinking about a special teams meeting I sat in this past spring at University of Akron, and, you know, they were new there. They're installing things. They actually had film from, you know, other colleges, NFL teams, et cetera, of guys getting in those situations and making those kinds of blocks and showing their players. And then they went out on the field and did a drill for 5-minute period where they worked those kinds of things. So there's a lot of things you can do. Again, create those situations. Think about what prepares your players on game day. There's a lot of details, a lot of things that can make you better. So that leads us to our last category today, which is the personal fouls, whether that's dead ball or something illegal where a player's essentially lost his cool, right? So it seems crazy that how do you simulate that in practice? We had a player who was like that. He was one of the most intense players I've ever coached, played linebacker and fullback for us. I mean, he was a guy who was all the time, practice or game, going at a high intensity. So he had some of those, and I said, we got to train this out of him. We have to make him aware that this can't happen. Lining him up on the line certainly maybe would bring it to his attention, but we needed to simulate it in practice. So we would designate, you know, somebody on the scout team, hey, after this play, I want you to come back and bump him in the back. And making sure our guys understood, like, whatever you do, it's to be safe. Like, I don't want you put in a bad position, or we might hold him intentionally during a play. But something like that, that for him we knew were triggers, and then it was our opportunity to coach him up. I can remember the first time that sophomore bumped him in the back, he was ready to take his head off. And that sophomore, I know when I told him to do it, was like looking at me with like a deer in the headlights, like, are you kidding? I'm not going to do that to him. So we trained it into him, though. And it was that opportunity, you know, the first time we started at him, like, whistle was blown. We were there right away and said, hey, we did that on purpose. We're looking at you. We're looking at you to keep your cool because it's important on game day. And then, you know, we trained it out of him, but that was always a tool we would use throughout is to tell one of those guys, again, being safe, but hey, I want you to do something this play that I want to see what the reaction is out of our guy. Because you know, Andy, what happens. It's not the guy who did it first. It's always the guy who reacts who's going to draw the flag.
Unquestioned. It's the reaction that we get. And it's another one of those things that, to your point, is typically not talked about or can be difficult to train. Because how do we create the emotion? How do we create some of the stress or the situations that we're going to feel on game day, right? And you think big rivalries and all that's great about high school sports. How are we making sure athletes are prepared to handle that? So sometimes we do need to simulate stress, you know what I mean? Whether it's, you know, making sure that the scout team has success and we're really going to double down on, you know, coaches are going to hoot and holler and we're going to make it really intense and we're going to feel like the sky is falling and the guys are going to have to stress themselves to pull themselves out of it, ignoring a potential penalty, to your point, the holding calls, an intentional holding, you know, letting people work through those situations. But ultimately, to your point, I think a lot of it has to come down with knowing your players, knowing who they are, building those relationships, and being able to talk to who we need to talk to and make sure they understand the importance of the team win versus what they might perceive as a personal one-on-one battle. That can be a huge concept for kids because we talk about football teaching teamwork and all those great values. But for a lot of our youngsters, they're just starting to learn this concept at a really deeper meaning. So we have to have quality conversations, some tests every now and then can definitely be useful, especially as our younger players start to get better throughout the year and they start to have a little success. You know, we can start to make some energy and some enthusiasm about that. But most importantly, I'd say, is the coaching standard, where me and you have both got to go to a lot of practices in the off season. We travel and do those things. And sometimes the better players, or sometimes the starters, tend to get away with things in a practice environment where the scout team, the other guys, maybe don't get quite the benefit of the doubt. So we let them get away with a push on a young sophomore because, oh, it's developing toughness, or we're developing a good little, you know, camaraderie and good competition right there. We don't hold those guys to the standard that we know on game day they're going to be held to. So I think we have to make sure that our best players, who are, you know, winning drill after drill and knocking guys down and looking super physical, we're not blinded by that fact, and we start to ignore things that might be technically wrong with their skills or potentially puts us in a bad situation on game day. And I think that's an area that coaches can often be, the shiny thing kind of gets in their eye, and they forget to look at, hey, what would the outcome be on game day? Hey, that was a great hit. But then he stood over top of him and yelled at him because, well, it's just a teammate, it's just a friend, it's just a buddy, so they're having a little fun with it. Let's drop that reminder. Let's coach to the standard. Let's make sure that they know on game day, referees are looking for that, and that could cost us. And that's going to cost your teammates, your brothers, you know, the school, everyone involved in this program. Just so you can get a couple of fun words in, it's not worth it. But I don't know if those conversations are being had on the deeper level. You know, I'm used to, again, seeing the coaches yell and blow the whistle and go off on some rant about, hey, that's a penalty on game day, but they're not really connecting it to the kid internally in a deep and meaningful manner. So know your players, build those relationships, and make sure you're having those difficult conversations, especially with your hotheads or your really powerful, talented athletes that can tend to make things look just like big collisions in good football, but there can be some niggly kind of behind the scenes stuff happening.
Well, it's all in the details. And as we've been emphasizing through this, it is creating those things in deliberate practice, which is the whole idea behind this series. We hope you are enjoying it so far in the 2019 season. Andy, as always, thanks again for some more great football talk, and I look forward to another week of this.
As always, Keith, thanks for having me, and to all listeners, obviously, good luck this week. We'll speak to you guys next week.
Follow Andy on Twitter at USAFootballMT. My Twitter is at Coach K Grabowski, and our Twitter handle for Coach is at FBDEVCoach. We have some great content there all season long. We are in our in-season format now. We have something different for you every day. I promise that these things are relevant, whether we're talking about leadership, the specifics of how to use some coaching methods, or something like we talked about today in deliberate practice. We have stuff that is going to be applicable to you all season long, so please continue to tune in and check it out. And as I mentioned before, check out our systems for blocking, tackling, and defeating blocks at footballdevelopment.com. There are all kinds of great drills for you there to create a deliberate practice.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.